Punk's not dead, and neither is New Wave. Join Buzz and Ben on Static Rage, the Punk and New Wave Album Review Podcast.
We are only a few short days and hours away from what is my favorite holiday, and I think it's safe to say is Buzz's as well. Samhain, All Hallows' Eve, whatever you want to call it. And that means one thing here on Static Rage. It's time to talk about some misfits. My name is Ben. With me as always is Buzz. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. It's not Halloween without the Misfits. I don't care what any of you say. I don't care what your favorite band is. This band personifies Halloween no matter what the iteration is. End of discussion.
Well, hopefully not, because that would be a very short episode. But yeah, we're here to talk about American Psycho, what is the fourth studio album by the Misfits. This particular album was released on May 13th of 1997, has a runtime of 39 minutes and 26 seconds, released on Geffen Records, produced by Daniel Ray and the Misfits, who were at the time Michael Graves on vocals, Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein on guitar, Jerry Only on bass, Dr. Chud on drums and keyboards on every track that has a keyboard, except for Dig Up Her Bones, which has keyboard by Daniel Ray.
And is arguably the best song on this album.
Yeah. I mean, arguably.
let's talk about the elephant in the room now and get it out of the way.
I love this song. This is the reason, I mean, other than being a Misfits fan, that I bought this album when it came out in 1997. And I listened to the album quite a bit, but I played the shit out of that song. It's one of my favorite Misfits song, period. And in my opinion, it is far and away the best track on this album. There are some other good stuff. But man, there's something about that song.
So from the Graves era Misfits, I actually prefer Saturday Night. But this Dig Up Her Bones is a very, 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 very close second to me. So it's funny how Ben and I have that like back and forth with that as being like, hey, this is still up there for me. So I was also going to belt out that song at the beginning. For those of you that know me personally, know that I can sing, you know, I can sing Michael Graves stuff very well. I decided not to, both A, because I didn't want to get sued, because we all know how Jerry Only is. Let's just be honest about this. I have not got over that. He's Jerry, guys. He's the reason that there was a lawsuit happening to begin with. I know people say it was Glenn, but I'm telling you it was Jerry. And the other reason is my dad's downstairs. He's not doing too well. And I don't want to belt out at the top of my lungs and have him be like, what the hell's going on? Are you okay? So
yeah,
I have no problem belting out for some of you, however, if you ever want to hear it. With that said, let's talk about a little bit of a backdrop before we get into the music about tonight. So when the Misfits originally ended, it was 1983. It was, I think, October either 28th or 29th. It was their Halloween show they did annually. The drummer for them at the time got drunk and what had to be removed. And Glenn flat out said, this is the last time we're ever going to play. And they finished their set and that was it. And flash forward a few years to the early 90s, I want to say 93, 94, there was a project that that Jerry and his brother Doyle came up with called Christ the Conqueror. Christ is spelled K-R-Y-S-T. And it was going to be a Christian metal group. If you don't believe me, there's this wonderful thing called YouTube that you can type those words in and you can actually listen to the album, because the guy they had doing vocals was actually doing a pretty good job. I'm glad they didn't hire him for the Misfits because he wouldn't have fit, but he actually did an okay job. But it's just amusing that they were doing that after doing a horror theme band. And oh, by the way, some of the songs on that demo tape or demo album ended up on this album. And I'll let you listen to those and come up with yourself on which songs it were. But spoiler alert, the very first track on here, while it is a instrumental, there's a lost track from Cuts to the Crypt called The Abominable Dr. Fives Rises Again. That is a 7-minute song. That is the one that actually came from Christ the Conqueror, and it's weird how the lyrics got changed. So interesting tidbit. You should go listen to that at least once to say you heard it. Going back to where I started my statement, however, During that time, about 94, 93, 94, 95, Jerry Only and Doyle wanted to do a reunion tour. Glenn was not on board. I won't bore everyone with the details, but Glenn was pissed that they were using the name without his say-so. There was a back and forth. There was a lawsuit about the bands, who got to use the band's name and who got to perform under it. Essentially, there was a settlement that happened, and the end result was that Jerry Only and Doyle got to keep the name The Misfits, and they got to use that while Glenn had to suck it up and be angry and be angry Glenn. And I could go into it further, but we're going to leave it at that. So around that time, they were trying to find a singer, and there was a lot going back and forth. They actually had some, they held auditions for people to come audition, and Michael Graves, I believe he was 19 at the time, went to audition. And I guess he did okay. And he probably didn't think he did great. But a few months passed, the reunion is about to happen. My understanding, this was like days, not even like months, but days before the actual reunion live show was going to happen. And Peter Steele from Typo Negative had been pegged to do the vocals. So for those of you out there wondering, yeah, we almost had Typo Negative singer playing for the Misfits, and that would have been cool. The other person that they were thinking about was actually Dave Vanian from the Damned. So it's interesting how they had some of these people that were already established that could have ended up being the singers. What happens, however, is Peter Steele didn't know any of the Misfit songs, so someone had to teach him. Well, they had to call in Michael to come and teach him, and Michael's teaching him these songs, and I'm going to paraphrase the hell out of this, but it hadn't even been an hour into rehearsals. Peter Steele stopped and said, well, I don't know why you guys are trying to make me do the singing, because this kid can sing. He should be your new singer. And because based on that, Michael ended up being the vocalist for this iteration of the Misfits on this album. Originally, the title of the album was going to be called Dead Kings Rise, which on that lost album Cuts from the Crypt, they have that track on there. I'm glad it didn't make it on, because it's okay, but didn't really fit, and kind of glad they kept it off. But I do kind of feel like it would have been a better title at the very least. So there is that. And for those that don't know, if you've never listened to the Misfits before because you've been living under a rock, or you just don't like horror music in general, American Psycho is from a book of the same name. Also has there's a movie based on it. It's a pretty good book, pretty good film. But Michael Graves had just finished reading this book and he decided to name it that. Ergo, we have American Psycho. The album cover is awesome, because, you know, I like about talking about album covers. It's the Crimson Ghost with the candelabra. When this album came out, it was my second year of middle school. And so me being a kid back then, you know, going, hey, this is a cool album, and you buy it and you open it up and there's a fucking poster inside. That was cool. And you see the image of the band. It's like, oh my God, this is so cool. This is what all my older friends listen to. And then you put it in the CD player and you play it, and it is not what the fuck you expected. So needless to say, my first listening through, I didn't like it, actually. Funny enough. It actually took about my third or fourth listen to when I finally understood where it was coming from. And I actually started to enjoy it for what it was. And I'm going to say that right now, this is actually, I appreciate the Michael Graves era a lot more than some other people do. While there are some reasons to be negative about this album and some of the tracks, I think the one that's actually unfair and the one that gets the most criticism is the Misfits aren't the Misfits without Glenn Danzig. And if you say that you can't even have a conversation about this. And that's one argument I always hear when it comes to dogging this album. And I think that's my biggest issue, is like, if you're going to have a conversation and say what you don't like about it, have that conversation. But if that's your primary goal is didn't have Glenn, then you can't really look at it objectively. So hopefully tonight, Ben and I will look at this objectively. And I've talked about it, so Ben, jump in.
Yeah, I come at it slightly different. Like I said, I got it when it first came out. I was a big fan of, I mean, I wasn't listening to them at the time, because, like, God, I was, when they broke up in 83, I was not seven yet. But, like, you know, and we talked about it when we did the box set, through Metallica and Danzig and everything else. I was familiar with the Misfits. They were like a legendary band, perhaps even more so than if they had continued. You know, I think part of it was just the fact that they did this stuff and then kind of broke up. So I was actually very excited to see this. And no, it wasn't Glenn. And I think that I will agree with Buzz if your thing is that, like, if you want to say that Glenn was the Misfits and that if it's not Glenn, then that is the Misfits. And I heard some people say that at the time and giving the lawsuits and everything, I kind of got that, but whatever, man, you know, this is fine. And I would say that considering everything Glenn did for the band, being the primary songwriter and everything else, okay, sure. But whatever, Michael and Doyle can use the name too. And I actually like this quite a bit. I thought Michael Graves had a really good voice. It's not Glenn, and I'm actually really glad they didn't try and get somebody to sound like Glenn. I think it would have been interesting to hear Peter Steele do some of these, and I find it very odd that Peter didn't know the songs, but okay, fair enough. Maybe he just didn't know the new songs. But yeah, no, I think that going with somebody who sounded as different from Glenn as Michael Graves does was the right choice. However, whereas Buzz grew to appreciate this the more he listened to it, other than like a couple of tracks, the more I listened to this, the less I liked it. Mainly because the thing that it had that started to detract from it was just how campy this is. Is the album cover cool? Yeah, but it's cool in a very campy kind of way. And I guess that fits who I guess everybody in the Misfits was. I'm not going to say Glenn isn't campy. Glenn just doesn't carry himself. So kind of like the throwback to the conversation we had in the last episode. But I think that there was the fact that almost every track on here is written as a direct response about a horror movie, like eventually got to me like, okay, this is kind of weird.
So I guess we go ahead and talk about that. So if you've never listened to Misfits before, yes, they do a lot of horror music. They didn't start that way, but that's eventually what they evolved into. While they did have some songs that were based on horror movies, for the most part, it was more horror themes is what they kind of fell into. This iteration of the band, it was all about the films or books themselves. While I do, it does make it campy, it kind of makes it kind of cheesy, makes it kind of dumb. So yes, if you're coming from the old style of, I grew up listening to this and this is crap now, I get it. I get why it can annoy some people, I do. Where the genius of this happens though is, and this is where I'll give Jerry some credit, Jerry wanted to get the kids involved. He wanted to get the younger generation and make it kind of more kid-friendly. Guess what? He succeeded in that. Sometimes you have to kind of dumb things down to get a wider audience, and I feel like that's what happened. What I'm getting at is whether you like this album, whether you like Michael, whether you think everything after 1983 is a hot steam pile of garbage, there's no denying that this album is responsible for getting more people into this band. Coupled with the fact that around the same time period, Danzig had been a solo act. So people were listening to this going, holy crap, Glenn Danzig used to sing for them. Guess what people do now? They start looking up older Misfits stuff. Lo and behold, you have a wider audience now. That is pretty damn genius.
Yeah, no, I don't. I do not disagree with that at all. And I think that this fits more who Doyle and Jerry are. This is really them putting their, and I guess Michael to some extent, because Michael did help out on some of the writing here, but it's really them putting their fingerprints on the band in a way that it wasn't in its initial incarnation.
Exactly. And I mean, you can feel that. Even though this is a punk album, there's a little bit of a metal influence. The mm-hmm. one thing about Doyle's guitar playing is he likes crunchier, more angrily aggressive strumming. He has a stage presence. He's out of everyone in the band that's ever been in this band, he's a fucking monster, man. If you ever see him like live, he's this He's like 6'3", I think. Big, tall, muscular dude. Just like, he looks like Frankenstein's monster. I mean, let's be real. That's what the fuck he looks like. So he has that stage presence. So when he comes out, that stage presence goes with his guitar playing, which is very aggressive. Is he a good guitarist? No. I will tell you right now, he's not a great guitarist. He can't play that well. I don't think. Being able to strum 3 to 5 chords is great. And it's great when you're like 19 to 24. It's not so great when you're in your 30s and 40s. By then, you better be an accomplished musician, unless you're just doing it to have fun, which there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're trying to sell records, you got to be a good player. I like Doyle a lot. He's actually in another band right now with a dude named Alex Story from Cancer Slug, which we really need to cover as well. And it's that genre of music. It's that early, like almost Glenn era of punk that's more dangerous and not as safe as this iteration of the Misfits were. And for that, it fits well. So I want to go out and say that it's, if you're looking at this from musically, you're not going to be impressed at all. But that's not why we listen to this. We listen to it because it's punk, and punk, you know, I don't expect the best guitar players. I don't expect the best vocalists. I expect it to get in, get out, say what they need to, and that's the end of it. And at least have some kind of attitude. And while it's campy, while it's cartoony, while it's comic bookish, it did have that feel. It did have that kind of aggressive feel to it. So there is that. That is what I look for with this band, and they delivered. So at least they did get that part right. You know, and the thing too is it's, I don't know, man, it's just, it's hard to explain because I can go back and forth with this. This is both, I think I like it personally. I think it's a good album, but objectively I could probably be on the opposite end of it. And I have this weird place in the middle where I'm at with it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is an album where I think a lot of the criticisms that people play towards the early Misfits and to a greater extent actually Kiss, that this is a very commercialized representation of the band, I think are fair, because there were, like, you know, up until the band until they won the lawsuit and the band became a living thing again, it was insane the amount of people you would see wearing Misfits merch when the band hadn't even been together in like 14 years, you know. So I think they did a great job in revitalizing and getting it back out there, like you said, creating a new legion of fans. We don't even necessarily have to talk about them being in WCW and catching in on the huge wrestling craze in the end of the 90s, which I have to say both Doyle and Jerry have the muscularity to do so, even if they are not, I'm not going to say they're unathletic. They both did play high school football, I think, but we're not like wrestler athletic. you know, so, and this is, the music on this is perfectly fine. In some ways, this is going to be blasphemy because I don't necessarily think the songs are as good, but if you just look at the pure musicianship of it, this is better than some of the stuff in the original Misfits. And, you know, Michael, again, I don't think Michael is Glenn, and I love Glenn's singing voice, but Michael is a hell of a singer. He's a lot better than a lot of other punk singers out there who are a lot more famous than he is.
This iteration of the band is responsible for bands like we did last week with Calibrace. It's responsible for The Others. It's responsible for The Crimson Ghosts. It's responsible for Blitzkid. It's responsible for another band I love, Mr. Monster. There's a lot of bands that came around in the early 2000s that fit that horror punk moniker because of this band, because of this iteration of this band. Would they have come out if the two Graves Era albums didn't come out? Perhaps. But I think these two albums really kind of pushed it towards being more mainstream and getting more people involved in it. And I'm going to go on a limb here. I like Glenn Danzig a lot. I like his style of singing. I think Michael's a better singer. I will die on that fucking hill. I think as a music standpoint, if I take them not doing what they're good at, if I just say vocalist versus vocalist, here, sing something, anything, I think Michael's a better singer. I really do. Is he a better performer? Probably not. But just based on like hearing him sing, hitting notes, I think he's a better vocalist.
I think I like Glenn's voice better than I do Michael's, but you might be right. I don't know. I'd have to really think about that and hear them like belt out the same things. And it's not a fair comparison now because Glenn's voice is kind of shit these days. And the last thing I heard from Michael's, his was not. But then again, there's like a 30-year age difference between them at least. What about that? I might not be precise on that. But yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, again, you know, and also giving them shit about being campy, which I have done in this already in this episode, and we'll probably do a little bit more when it comes time to grade. But this is also like an era of White Zombie, you know, and that had a very monster's take on using horror influence and stuff. Now it's a little darker than this, yes, but also still like that campy love of like the old school horror that we've talked about. It's just that's not exactly what the Misfits were through the looking glass, but it's what they kind of became.
I think it's a fair statement. This falls into the trope that I've been using a lot lately on this podcast of when you change members in a band, while the personnel might be the same, when you change your sound drastically, I almost wish you would have gone with a different band name. And I this is like a paramount to where this and Metallica are both what I use when I bring this up. They're good on their own. Part of me wonders if they hadn't used the Misfits name, if we would even be talking about this. And two, if they did change the name, would it change people's opinions on this album when it came out? And I don't know that. I'm sure someone's asked that question. I can't be the only person that's thought about that. I haven't seen anything about that yet. So I'm honestly curious on how that would be if we were to pose this to a question to people nowadays, looking back.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You can, I'll put my Twitter, since I don't think Buzz has a Twitter. When I post this, I'll put that and you can try and answer that question. I will answer it for myself. If this was not the Misfits, if they had called it something else, would I have heard about it? No, absolutely not. I mean, at this time, I was pretty heavily in the metal camp and wasn't really, not that there was a whole lot of punk at the time, or at least that I was listening to, because that was in the era of the pop punk stuff. And other than like Rancid, I wasn't really listening to anything that was coming out of that, because I kind of detested Green Day, still kind of do, like Social Distortion. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Bad Religion. But this was definitely not in that camp, so I don't think I would have heard of that. If I had heard Dig Up Her Bones on something, then I would have probably sought it out to try and track it down, even though it wasn't like the heavy stuff that I was listening to at the time. But, you know, I also get, after you have fought so long and hard to take something that, like I said, was for 14 years, was kind of existing and selling merchandise and everything, and was still very viable, but wasn't, you know, that you felt that you contributed to in a real way. Why wouldn't you want to use that to get your name out there? Because this, I mean, as influential as this was, this peaked in the Billboard Top 200 at 117, which is probably higher than any other album that we've talked about. I don't know. I didn't look any of them up. I just see this on the Wikipedia page. So without that name recognition and people being excited about the return of this legendary band, even if it didn't have the name most associated with it, I don't know. I don't think it would have sniffed the top 200.
So then I guess the second part to my question is, if they didn't have the name The Misfits attached to this, and you did happen to hear about it back then, and let's say their name was The Dead Kings, because I think that would be a cool name for this if they hadn't done it. And all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, this has, you know, two guys from the original Misfits in it. Holy crap. Much like what Glenn did with Samhain, to where if you didn't know Glenn was in that band, you'd be like, who the fuck is this? Oh shit, it's Glenn Danzig's second band. Let me go listen to it. I guess I would pose that question too then, is if that was the case, if it had gone that route, would would people have been kinder when this album came out? Would it have been something we look back on and go, hey, that was a cool little side project? Or would we all still be saying the exact same things? That's the other part I'm curious about as well.
I don't remember, like, other than the people who shit on it just because Glenn wasn't in it, I don't remember hearing a whole lot of negative things about this at the time. I'm not saying that they weren't out there, I just wasn't hearing them. So what I think would have happened is that it would have got a lot of buzz, because it is a quality album. It's just, you know, I just don't know that it would have made it big enough of a steer that it would have got the follow-up albums that it did. You know, and that might have actually have been better, because they probably would have had to, and I'm sure they toured the legs off of this, but it might have allowed them to gel more as a band and not let the egos kind of pull it apart in the way that it did. Or maybe not. I don't know. Sorry, it's impossible to say, really. What are your thoughts on it?
I think from a business standpoint, it was smart to keep the name. I'm kind of like you with this. I think that if they hadn't had that name recognition, I think this would have been a one and done band. I think they would have been forgotten about. It's as much safe to say that. I think that's what would have happened. But that's where the brain is. The heart says you should change it because it's not what everyone knows. But the brain says, fuck you, cash in on this, because otherwise you're going to be forgotten about. So, like I said, I go back and forth with things like this a lot, because I honestly wonder, like, man, would it have been better overall not to have used that name or not to use that recognition and called yourself something else? But they didn't. They did not do that. And in a way, I'm kind of glad they didn't do it. In a way, I kind of wish they had. Where I'm happy about is the one plus of this is fucking Mike Graves can sing, and I'm glad that we got another album out of it because of this. Regardless of any negatives that you might hear about him as a person, I am going to say as a vocalist, he's awesome. I've met him twice. He has been out of everyone. I met everyone in this band except for Glenn. So I've even met Dr. Chud, and Chud's a cool guy too. Out of everyone that I've met that's ever been in this band, Mike Graves was the most fucking chill down to earth dude I've met. He was the one that, you know, actually wanted to have a conversation. He actually wanted to talk to each fan he talked to, even if it was only a few minutes, because, you know, you're tired after a set, you want to move on. Still wanted to have a conversation. Everyone else was like, hey, cool, glad, thanks for listening, bye. Or in Jerry's case, who the fuck are you? Oh, you want to take a picture? Oh, fuck you, you fucking fuck. I'm from New Jersey. You know, shit like that. That's in which, for those who don't know, I've met Jerry only once, and I don't ever want to meet him again. I don't care if he hears me. You're a dick, man. You know, the way you treated some people, I don't know that I'm okay with that, but whatever. You know, that's kind of where I'm at with this. You know, regardless of what I'm sure someone's going to bring up, recent things that Michael has said, I don't want to get too far into here because that's not what I'm here to talk about, but judging him as a singer, I like him as, honestly, he's been a fucking good human being as far as I'm concerned. Where everything else lies, that's going to lie, you know, going to lay where it is. Everyone's got their opinions on it. That's mine.
Sure. Well, shall we talk about some tracks?
Let's do that. And I think I'll go first this time.
Yeah, man, go for it.
So the ones, first off, there's some things I would cut from this album before I even get to this. So I'm going to kind of skip over some things. I liked American Psycho. It was a very good song. I don't know that we've titled the album that, but it was a good song. Walk Among Us is cool because it harkens back to an album that was released on, I think it's Ruby Records. It was the first album other than Static Age, but it was released chronologically different, if that makes sense. But it kind of harkens back to that album. The Hunger is awesome. Again, if you've seen that movie, you know everything that song is about. That's a badass track. Dig Up Her Bones is the highlight of this album. That's the one that probably gets played the most. I enjoyed Black Light. As much as I make fun of it, I actually think Resurrection is a very catchy song. Some of you out there may not like it, but it was catchy to me. This Island Earth was catchy. Crimson Ghost was badass. The Haunting was fucking badass. Mars Attacks was badass. Hate the Living, Love the Dead had so much energy to it. And you, I, yeah, that's probably my second favorite song on here. The Shining is cool, which funny about that, The Shining is about poltergeist, not The Shining by Stephen King, which always bothered me as a kid. And the album ending, Don't Open Till Doomsday, was a very good track at the end. I thought it was a good way to end it. Kind of wish they'd left the secret track, Hell Night, off of it because it's kind of just okay. I don't know why they included it, but whatever, it's all right. Those are the highlights to me. And everything else I didn't mention, I wouldn't say cut, but I probably would listen to once, go, eh, okay, it was cool, skip.
So I don't disagree with Buzz very much on this. I think that the Abominable Dr. Phibbs instrumental, it's cool that it shouts out that movie because that is a classic, but it's not the best instrumental in the world. But tracks 2 through 8, I think, are really good. I like American Psycho. You already know that I love Dig Up Her Bones from Hell They Came, Blacklight. Those are all pretty good. I'm not as high on Resurrection as Buzz is, but it's also all right. Crimson Ghost is okay. The Haunting is okay. That second half of the album, like I said, where they really get into the where it's all based on horror movies or the stories behind the horror movies, just. After the first couple of listens to the album, when I was like super cool that the Misfits had released another album and that this is the era where you buy things. So since I paid $20 for it or whatever, I was invested in it to a level that I am not 20 years later or there ago or thereabouts. I could honestly do without any of that. But the stuff that they wrote, having a few touches to horror movies or novels was cool, but really the stuff that they get away from that I thought was the best stuff on the album.
I have often said, and I will say it again here, that if I could, the songs I just listed, and if you go back and listen to our review on Famous Monsters, the songs that really stuck out for me, I would mix both of those onto one album, and that would be like the one My Graves era album I would listen to, and be like, there, that's what they're capable of. Ideally, that's what I would do. I know it's never going to happen, but that's what I would do is I'd release like a, hey, this is what the album should have been, and call it like American Monsters or something like that, and then go from there. And that's
Famous Psychos, that would be as
Famous
well.
Psychos, that works too. So there's a couple things on here to speak about. So the Abominable Dr. Phibes, even though it starts out as a even though it's an instrumental, I two things I want to say about it. One, off Cuts from the Crypt, there is a longer version that's 6 minutes long. It's called The Abominable Dr. Phibes Rises Again. And it's actually a pretty good track. I mean, it's not great, but it's kind of what I wish they would have put on here and as a way to end the album. I think that would have been cool. Of course, they didn't. I would have much rather heard that than half the songs on here. So just saying, so there is that. The other thing is they wanted to call this album Dead Kings Rise, and that also is a track off Cuts from the Crypt that I wish had made it on here, because I think that would have been a cooler title track, and I think it would have been a cooler intro, me personally. Again, it's nothing great, but it's up tempo, and it was written by them. It wasn't based on a horror movie, and I kind of wish they'd have included that. The one thing I'm going to say too is, looking back as a kid, there was a video for American Psycho that came out, and the very beginning of the video, I remember seeing it on VHS because someone had like ripped this, and this is like right before DVDs came out. It's when I saw this. It was on the VHS tape, so it was kind of grainy. So it was even better because all horror movies with that grainy texture, just chef's kiss. and it's cheesy, and I'm going to do my best to describe it really quick. And I'm only doing this because I feel like it's important when we talk about this era. Putting yourselves in as a kid in the 90s that was an adolescent in the 90s. It starts off with someone dressed as the Crimson Ghost playing the organ. In the middle of his organ, the abominable Dr. Fives is playing. There's four coffins set out, and about halfway through it, the lids push down, and it's all four members of the band. They wake up like they're zombified. They walk out, and then it goes straight into American Psycho. I loved that opening as a kid because I loved horror movies. I grew up, there was, you know, if you remember that show, that network TNT had what was called Monster Vision that used to come on Saturday nights, especially during October. They'd show these old horror movies from like the 30s and 40s that by nowadays we'd probably make fun of. But, you know, as a kid, you're like, oh, that's really cool. That's what hearkened to me when I saw that. And it's important because the Misfits, at least in this iteration, are almost more of a visual band rather than the old iteration where it was more about the music, at least to me. Where I'm going with this is going from seeing that and putting it with this music, that is why I have such fond memories more than anything else, more so than the music itself. So when we get to the grading tonight, that's going to play into this, and I'll try to mention this and give my, hey, take a grain of salt when I'm getting ready to say this. So I wanted that thrown out there before we get to that part.
No, man, that's very important. And I think that the visual aspects you're seeing, and it's something else, and we've kind of talked about this, so I don't feel the need to belabor the point. But we have to remember this is also either right in the middle or right at the end of the Tales from the Crypt run. And this is a very Tales from the Crypt visualization that I think of when I think of this era of the Misfits.
And that's where I'm at. I mean, it's what I just described to you. It's almost like the beginning of Tales from the Crypt. It's campy and kind of dumb, but, you know, we're in for a treat. The other thing, too, is Mike Graves always wore skull face paint when he went on stage. That had a big influence on me as a kid because I remember more than one Halloween I dressed up as him because I thought it was so cool. Like, here's this fucking monster band coming out, and they've got devil locks, and the singer's face is painted like a skull, and he's wearing a fucking top hat. He's got these fucking leather jackets and spikes on and shit. He looks cool. You know, he's a young kid. You're like, man, that's just so damn cool. It's almost like an edgier version of Kiss, I guess, is a way to explain it. And what Ben was talking about earlier, they also had at least twice that I remember where the band came out and had a slight stint in the wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
They threw a hat in wrestling, so to speak. And I remember that being part of their shtick of getting their name out. And it worked. A lot of my friends that didn't listen to this kind of music, when I mentioned this, like, oh yeah, I saw them on, I don't know if it was WCW or WWF, but they were like, oh my God, I saw them on that. You know, they came in and it was three of them and they hit this dude with a chair and it was really fucking cool. And I was like, yeah, that's a band, man. You know, we should give them a listen to. So there was that too. It's just, it's hard to describe if you didn't pay attention to it, that level of marketing that was also kind of meant a lot to like younger kids.
Yeah.
I wish I was one. And
yeah,
I'm going to do my best to grade this objectively, but everyone needs to understand, like, this is where I'm coming from when I grade this tonight. You know, I have a lot of fond memories of this, and, you know, I can take the nostalgia glasses off all day, but at the end of the day, they're still going to be there and I'm going to remember it. So
sure. Yeah. You know, as Slavoj Žižek says, we are all eating out of the trash can of ideology all the time. With that said, I'll go ahead and give my grade. And, you know, this has, as we have beat into the ground at this point, one of my favorite Misfits songs on this album. And I think half the album is very good. The rest of it is stuff that would be more at home, I think, on a soundtrack to a movie than on a standalone album that's not a B-sides album. And I guess that's my complaint, is some of the stuff feels like it is B-sides, not meant for like, or befitting a full LP, especially not the first LP in a long, long time. With that said, I can't really hate this because it doesn't deserve it, because it is still very, very good, but I'm going to give it a B-.
So let's just jump in with the two grades again. Again, if this is your first listen to, you know, just so you Do you understand? I give it two different grades. I like being difficult. I like being that guy. Also, just because I think you have to look at it. To me, when I look at it objectively, I try to do that. So I try to separate the actual musicianship from the genre of music. So the musicianship wise, it's just okay. If I'm going this is my objective side of this. This is going to get a C+ for me because it is just okay. I think the best thing on here is the fact that Michael Graves has an awesome voice, and that is why it's a C and not a D for me. I love this band. I think they're like, even back then they were very cool, but even back then I could recognize this is not the best music I've ever heard. And part of me wonders if without the visualization, if I would have been into it. So music wise, I get a C+. It's okay. You know, it's, I certainly don't have an album, even though I was in a punk band before. I was in several of them. I did a horror punk band for a while. You know, did we make it big? Obviously not, because you haven't heard of me. However, do I think we did a little bit of playing? Maybe. It's arguable. I'm not going to say one way or the other, but this is where this falls into. It's just okay. Remember, that doesn't mean bad. It means okay. From the genre, this is where it hurts me to say this. As much as I love this band, as much as I like this album, because I do listen to this album, as much as I love Michael Graves, as much as I love the fact, talking about all the wonderful things as a kid growing up listening to this and seeing it and being awed and starstruck by it, I gotta say, as a punk album, it's kind of on the weak side for me, and that's sad. It's hard for me to say that. The other thing is, this is, I've heard it described as almost being hardcore punk. I don't agree with that at all. This almost has more of a pop punk sound to it, and you people know how much I dislike pop punk. However, what saves it for me, again, Michael coming in saving the day. I'm not going to be shy away from that. He is what saved this album for me. His vocals and the fact that Dick Upper Bones is a goddamn banger of a song. With that said, from a punk perspective, this is also getting a C+, which is might be something you didn't think you're going to hear from me, because again, I do like this album. I just have to be objective when I give it.
Yeah, that is a little bit surprising.
I know people right now are going, "Oh my God, I can't believe this is like one of your favorite bands. How could you go that far?" You know, and it's no secret that while I think this is a more punk album than Famous Monsters, I actually think the musician, like overall, I think Famous Monsters was actually a better album. It just wasn't a better punk album.
Fair enough. All right. Well, it's time to figure out what we're going to do next, because October is over.
October's over, but you know what is coming up?
What's that?
November. Did you know that? Do you know how to say November in Gaelic?
Why don't you tell me?
It is pronounced Samhain. That's right. It means summer's end, but it also fucking means November. And what better way to welcome in November than a coming of fire? An initium of fire, if you will. Because of those that don't know Greek or Latin might not know what initium means. And, you know, maybe that's our little surprise for you all next week.
Surprise?
Will it be next week, Ben? Or will we have a surprise that comes before next week?
Well, I guess they'll just have to stick around and see.
Guess I'll stick around and find out. We might have something special for you. We might not. Maybe we're just doing it to BS you. Either way, we will be here with you until the very end. Dig up your bodies and bring them back again.